The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Monday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, how a hurricane blowing through one college basketball program really is an ill wind. Malice in Wonderland at the time when college basketball should be taken in a positive light? Yeah, there is a little bit. We're going to show you who the Mad Hatter is behind that. And we talk about the struggles of one NBA team in Money Time today. We're going to tell you that there's a bell curve out there worth following.
So, Dave, tons of insanely dramatic college basketball action this past weekend. Busy weekend in the NBA as well. What'd you see for a first take on a Monday?
I'm so glad you said insane without knowing where I was going to go with this. Tulsa fired Doug Wojcik today. Now, if any time in the next couple of years we don't have a bet on Tulsa, we will root for Tulsa to lose every game they play. What did Doug Wojcik do? He was there for 7 years. He won 140 games, lost 92, six consecutive winning seasons. That's pretty good. Wojcik's a good coach. You might remember him as the point guard at Navy back when David Robinson was playing, Sweet 16 Navy team, served and as assistant under Tom Izzo at Michigan State. You learned good basketball there. Why was he fired? At least they were upfront about it. Revenues were down. That their basketball revenues were down 35%. Well, if you're winning and revenues are down, don't you think maybe it's a bad economy? Maybe it's the athletic director not promoting well enough, because it's not the coach's job to sell tickets. It's his job, win games, get your players through school. Wojcik was doing that. It's a failure elsewhere, which ends up costing him his job. So here's our over-under bet. And if there's anyone at Tulsa in the administration that wants to offer us a line, last 7 years, you won 140 games, you're over under for the next 7 years. It ain't 140, guys. We're going to look forward to watching you have your struggles. Okay, big basketball weekend, but I know you. I've known you for a long time. You were watching football, weren't you?
I was. You have to. Arena football.
You don't have to.
Yeah, I do. I love arena football. It's a great sport to watch, and it's a great sport to bet on. Over the years, it's been a very lucrative sport for me. But I saw something Friday, and again, when you watch this show, Dave and I, between us, have, what, about 40 years of experience here in Vegas. We're jaded veteran sports bettors. Not a lot that we haven't seen, and not a lot that's going to make you stand up and go, did I just see what I think I saw? You don't see a lot of surprises. So Friday night, arena football season opener on the NFL Network, and the hour before kickoff, it was announced, oh, there's going to be a labor stoppage. The players aren't going to play. They're going to go with replacement players. Of course, players in arena football get all of $400 a game, and I think they were looking to strike to get something like $600 or $800 per game. We're not talking huge sums of money here. Well, the stories were coming out that the owners had decided to preempt the players, and they fired all of their players going in. So when the game started on the NFL Network, two teams using replacement players, and you know what arena football is. It's just boom, boom, touchdown, touchdown. You get three stops a game, you're likely to win. Well, we saw five consecutive drives with a grand total of one first down. And then, like I said, something that I'd never seen before. Midway through the second quarter, all of a sudden, a handful of Pittsburgh players run through the tunnel. Guys who were fired by their owner earlier in the day, made the trip down to Florida, played the game anyway, ran onto the field in the second quarter, and boom, first play on the field. Pittsburgh throws for a touchdown, goes on to win the game 40-26. You think you've seen everything? Nah, it could still surprise you. Arena football, a lot of fun and a lot of drama on Friday night. All right, Dave, first take is done, and now we need to set up the week so that everyone knows exactly what's going on this week. Tuesday show. Tomorrow's show is going to be about brackets. We're going to, Dave and I will each have brackets, our own brackets we'll be talking about, and we'll also do previews of the secondary tournaments, the NIT, the CBI, the CIT. No, they don't get the pub that the Big Dance does, but you know what? The money you cash from winning a CIT bet is just spends just as easily as the money you cash from winning an NCAA tournament bet. So we'll break down those three tournaments and brackets tomorrow. For Wednesday, it's going to be a loaded show. And Wednesday is a day you're going to need, if you like Vegas Sports Day, we're going to do literally a double show. Normally we're on the air for about between 30 and 40 minutes. A Wednesday show, it's going to be like two shows. We're going to break down the first round Thursday games and the first round Friday games. So be prepared for Wednesday. That's when we're really going to break it down here on Vegas Sports Day. We're not going to do a show on Thursday while there are live games going on. We've already broken down the Friday game, so no show will be dark on Thursday. Back again on Friday for some of those weekend previews in college hoops. So double show Wednesday, no show Thursday, back again on Friday. That's how it sets up for the coming week. Dave, first bracket thoughts. Surprises, in or out? Who do you got?
Very few. You know, most years we would come in on the show and say, wow, this team should have been in. This team didn't belong in. Very, very few. The only team in the tournament that came as a legitimate surprise was Iona. Did not see that one coming. But when you look at the top teams that were, they say, snubbed, teams like Drexel, Washington, yeah, I mean, they had okay seasons. But no, we didn't see that dramatic impact. Maybe it's showing the sophistication over time because we've got so many people who follow those processes so carefully. Teddy talked about Joe Lunardi, you know, on the show last week, who doesn't just chart the teams, he charts the committee. Knows the way that the committee thinks. Well, how did Lunardi do? One team. Only missed one team on his entire bracket. That was Iona. Yeah, there were some borderline teams in there, but we sort of like that. Gives us some teams that maybe we can play against a little bit. Usually, though, it's sort of like the bowl show. We talk about the first day in here after the bowl, pairings come out and say, gee, we wish this team was playing this team. We wish this was here. You're always going to have this little muddle where you look in the second or third round, oh, we didn't want these teams crossing this early. But there are some instances where we do have some sleeper teams getting through. Each of us will have our brackets posted in the covers posting forum tomorrow. The bracket I've got in my mind right now has two teams not seeded number one getting to the finals. Not number twos either. We've got a couple teams three or lower that I've got getting all the way through to the finals. You can make some money off that.
Yeah, in terms of my surprises for who got in and who got out, again, the same names are going to pop out there. Drexel and Washington, you can make an okay case for either one of those two teams to get in. You don't see regular season winners of major conferences get snubbed very often. And Drexel, you know, in my mind, they were, certainly from a power rating perspective, I think they were better than Iona. Maybe Texas and BYU, teams that kind of snuck in there that shouldn't have been there. But when the tournament field expands, you know, first 64 to 65, now 65 to 68, what does it do? All those teams used to be able to bitch and moan about not getting in. They're getting in now. So I agree with you 100%, Dave. Not a lot. If you're upset about the team getting in or not getting in, it's a nuance issue. There aren't any egregious errors like the three-loss Utah State team that didn't get selected, what, about 5 years ago. That type of thing can and did happen in the 64 team field. In the 68 team field, not so much. All right, seedings that were wrong. What stands out to you, Dave? Something that you want to, come on, we're bitching and moaning about the committee. It's our job today. What do you want to bitch and moan about?
Some of it, when you see these little machinations inside, so that it's not just pure strength on this curve going all the way down. Teddy and I were having lunch with a great old friend, Russ Culver, last week, who just called one absolutely dead on. Said, you know what's going to happen? They're going to seed Kentucky and Indiana in the same bracket, so that they could have that rematch when you get to the Sweet 16 round. You see some of those little subtleties all throughout here. So let's say, no, it's a pure S-curve. The teams are ranked in particular order. No, we don't see that. We see these little subtle matchup plays that they do get out there. I think Kentucky-Indiana being the most agreed. Indiana doesn't fall in that spot of the seeding. When you look at the way they've listed the other Big Ten teams in their flow, look like a little bit of manipulation there to get that Kentucky-Indiana game.
Yeah, and of course, after, should Kentucky beat Indiana, they're in line for a rematch against some team called Duke. And I seem to remember those two squads playing a fairly memorable game, what, oh, exactly 20 years ago? You think that matchup got set up by accident? No, that's not a basic S-curve. I mean, you can have your usual complaints. You know, Xavier ranked a little bit too high. They did not play well down the stretch. I thought the Mountain West as a conference was seeded too high. UNLV and San Diego State in particular. Maybe a team like Memphis seeded too low. You look at Florida State. They beat Duke and North Carolina four times combined this year. 4-1 against Duke and UNC. North Carolina gets the one. Duke gets the two. Florida State gets the three.
No, they stink. They can't.
Oh, yeah. We won't say a word about Florida.
No.
Seminoles.
Don't bet Florida State. No, you don't want that. Not yet, anyway.
We won't say a word about that again.
Yeah.
All right. We've got some surprises in or out. We've got some seedings that were issued. Let's get to the heart of one of our next strategies. And we'll start with this letter from Mark in Toronto. Mark says, gents, can you explain the strategy you use to hedge your bets once a long shot has reached the Final Four of a tournament or playoffs? March Madness, World Cup, NBA playoffs, etc. For example, I had a lot of Baltimore Ravens at plus 1,300 and plus 1,000 to win the Super Bowl and then came away with nothing even though they made a good run. Teddy talked about having a lot of 49ers from early in the season when they were significantly undervalued. I didn't expand on how he profited from that position. Should I just start betting against the team I have chosen? I hate doing this and then kick myself for losing faith in my analysis if my team wins. Or do sharp bettors use strategies such as parlays to hedge their bets? Interesting question, Mark. And we've been talking a lot on the show about hedging strategies, the way to hedge off some of these long shot positions. Dave, why don't you give them a primer?
Hey, we won't be too remedial about the hedge concept because we talked about this early back in the football season. There's no such thing as a hedge unless you preset it. If you make a very good bet, it goes in the drawer. You would hedge against Baltimore if you thought there was something wrong with that bet. If you liked the Patriots, perhaps, in the playoffs against them. Then you bet it because you like that bet. Never make a wager with a negative expectancy if you've got something good sitting in your pocket. Here's what's different, though. When we get to tournaments like this one, we will intentionally make plays because of a perceived hedge value later. On tomorrow's show, we're going to single out several teams that we like from a value standpoint, not necessarily to win the tournament, but to get far enough down the line to create a window of opportunity. These are different bets. These are bets being made with the notion that we will be looking to perhaps hedge somewhere. Naturally, you've got two ways. The money line favorite in an individual game, you don't want to lay points against a hedge team because you could get middled. You know, team could win by less than the spread. Both tickets disappear. The money line favorite, but the great thing about the plethora of offshore books and the expanded Las Vegas menu, when you get to the Sweet 16, there are all these redesigned brackets that are out there. There will be odds to win the Sweet 16, fresh odds to win the whole tournament again at that point. There will be a lot of options. So tomorrow, when we talk about some of these 30, 40, 50-to-1 teams, even 100-to-1 team we're going to talk about tomorrow, part of what we're doing is knowing that, yeah, we're planning to maybe hedge a little bit when the time gets there. 100-to-1 isn't to win the tournament. 100-to-1 is to get far enough in the tournament to create opportunity.
One of the biggest mistakes that recreational players make, and this goes not just for sports betting, it goes when you're at the blackjack table, when you're at the roulette wheel, or when you're playing slots, or any other of the gambling games that people play. One of the biggest mistakes that the amateur bettor or amateur gambler or even experienced gamblers make is looking at short sample size. They say, oh, well, I tried that strategy in blackjack. It didn't work. Basic strategy is no good. I lost money that session. And every time I hit on 16 against a dealer's 5, that strategy's worked for me. Or similar type thought processes. When you say, well, this didn't work for me in the past, therefore it's not going to work for me in the future. You had, Mark, a couple of good bets on the Baltimore Ravens. You had good bets at good numbers. What happened? Well, Billy Cundiff missed a field goal. And you end up losing those bets. Were those good bets to have? Sure. Were you in good position throughout the course of the playoff run for Baltimore? Absolutely. Did it work out? No, not in this instance. Would you make those same bets again? Absolutely, you should make those same bets again. Just because it doesn't work once, just because it didn't work this time, doesn't mean that it's a failed or a flawed strategy. So be aware of those short sample sizes. Just because it didn't work this time, you know, it doesn't mean that you will never be able to find a profitable opportunity using these type of situations.
So much more of this tomorrow. I said we will have full brackets available. You'll be able to see them online. We can't quite graph them on the show. The brackets are just a little bit too big. Be available in the posting forums. And then tomorrow at the top of the show, we're going to talk about some of the best value bets out there so that you could play along and maybe create that little bit of a manipulation. One of these great settings where you have 101 team in the Elite Eight rooting for perhaps the other side a little bit. Always a fun thing to do.
Yeah. Can you imagine trying to look at the brackets? I know a lot of people watch on their cell phones. You know, it'd be real tough to break down the brackets of the cell phone. But we'll have those up in the forums. We'll talk about them on the show tomorrow. But for today, well, the first thing I want to talk about is the party. We had issues, technical issues, with the projected party for a Wednesday night. Dave and I were trying to do a show live on location here in Las Vegas. The technical issues proved to be too much to overcome. We did not want to run the risk of any streaming issues while we were on air on what is likely to be our most watched show of the year. So basically, we bailed. It didn't come together for this year. That doesn't mean that you can't hang out with Dave's not going to show up, but I'm going to go to the Tropicana on the Las Vegas Strip on Wednesday night. You want to talk college basketball with me? I'll just be sitting there. I look like this guy, that's how you recognize me. I'll probably have a different shirt, something less bright. But I will be at the Trop on Wednesday night, 6 o'clock through till probably about 7, 7:30. So please, if you want to come to town, come stop by, say hi, say you watch the show, ask some questions. It should be a lot of fun, but it's not going to be an officially sanctioned event. It was just too important to make sure that the technical issues were in your favor. So the show goes off without a hitch on Wednesday. So that's what we're going to do. Same normal time on Wednesday. You want to hang out with me? Come to the Trop on Wednesday night. Like I said, I'll be there from 6 till about at least to 7:30. We'll give you a chance to shoot the shit. Yeah, I could say that. Or on the internet. To shoot the shit live on air. Talk some games, talk some brackets. Should be a lot of fun. Tropicana, Wednesday. I'll be there at 6. All right. Email. Great email today from Mark. Please keep those questions coming in. The address, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter, at Vegas Sports Day. And like we said earlier, we're going to be posting our brackets in the covers.com posting forum. Lots of active threads and discussions going. Again, covers.com/posting forum.
Coming up next, you've probably all heard the phrase a wolf in sheep's clothing. In the postmortem today, we're going to talk about a wolfers who's just a sheep. That's coming up on Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name on my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Okay, guys, an awkward postmortem today. We look inside the patient and we find an abscess. So it's time for us to operate.
All right. March Madness not only brings the most exciting time of the year for college basketball fans and bettors, but it rivals the high point of any sports cycles, right there with the Super Bowl when it comes to an event with enormous hype and enormous betting handle right here in Las Vegas. Especially from a gambling perspective, we can only guess how many millions of people will be filling out brackets this week or making bets or both. But it's not all sunshine. Verez Ward has come under suspicion of point shaving at Auburn, bringing a small dark cloud to the proceedings. We say a small cloud because there are not many games or much money involved from what has come to light so far. The problem is not really the particulars of this situation, but how it gets played out. So here come the headlines like, gambling in college sports is a big worry, by John Solomon in the Sunday's Birmingham News. And I mean, we saw a good taste of this last year when, right around tournament time, all of a sudden, unsubstantiated allegations about the San Diego Toreros and point-shaving issues there, issues which, number one, haven't heard a word about those issues since last year at this time. Number two, haven't heard a word about the San Diego Toreros since last year at this time, unless you're a serious college basketball fan. Those point-shaving allegations were thrown out by a convicted drug dealer. And, of course, you know, as soon as you say point-shaving, you get headlines. So, unfortunately, right now, it's kind of here-we-go-again time with this issue as writers get their moment in the sun and a chance to create some big headlines and some big readership numbers based on nothing but sensationalism, yellow journalism.
So as Teddy said, it's not the first go-round with this. It won't be the last. But what it does do is enable us to put the proper perspective on what happens in college sports, especially as it relates to gambling. Now if we trace it back, in my betting lifetime, over 100,000 bettable college events have been on the board. So you take every possible scandal that there's been in that time, that is a remarkable integrity for that industry when you put it into that perspective, which we don't see many people do. Take any other industry over that period of time, put that many different events into play, compare the integrity. So sometimes we actually like it when these small scandals come up because it helps show in the big picture how much you can trust what's going on. But college athletes having integrity, that's not a headline. Who's going to read that? Front page story, people are going to glance right through that, move on to something else. Unfortunately, that's just not the way the media is. From our standpoint, it sort of came to a head back in 2006 when the New York Times, a newspaper that tends to become extremely irrelevant around March Madness, ran this article by David Leonhardt. It was a story based on a very, very poor study done by Justin Wolfers. Wolfers was a graduate from the Wharton School of Business, University of Pennsylvania, arguably the best business school in the country. But Wolfers wanted to make a name for himself in the new field of forensic economics. He wanted to be able to take these little numbers and tweak them to show you supposedly little truths out there that you were missing. Well, it was a terrible piece of journalism in that article. And we can say that because we had communications directly with Leonhardt at the time and also with the ombudsman from the Times, whose job is to sit and sift through public criticism. The Wolfers research was poor, which we'll get into a little bit later. The writing in that article was extremely poor. But again, it's March. People aren't reading the New York Times in March. It was their way to get themselves on the table. I thought, okay, that's all gone. As time went by, Wolfers just sort of faded off into the shadows. The particular study has rarely been talked about. And now it's time for us to fill out our brackets, celebrate conference tournament weekend, and here they come again.
Yeah. The Wolfers study was called, quote, exposing cheating and corruption. So we know where he was looking. Subtitled, quote, point shaving corruption in college basketball. Well, we're talking about a five-page paper. This wasn't, you know, I mean, Dave and I write longer articles on a weekly basis. It was a five-page paper with a weak premise, and there was little attention paid to it over the years. But the Times knew they could generate interest, and they did in March when college basketball comes to the forefront. Something like the following quote from Wolfers will certainly attract attention. After all, you know, no one's going to go to the Times for college basketball news unless they see stuff like this. Quote, you shouldn't have what's happening on the court reflect what's happening in Las Vegas. And that's exactly what's happening. Note the silliness of that language. He says exactly what's happening, not what might have happened. At least Jay Cornegay, the sportsbook director from LVH, was quoted by the Times as calling the Wolfers' conclusions, quote, ludicrous. That was probably the best part of the New York Times article. So we only cringe at what we were likely to read as the Ward story unfolds in the weeks to come. Stuff like this, the Birmingham News article that we talked about earlier, and even something from David Schwartz, who works right down the street at UNLV, a guy who's written some great stuff on the history of gambling, a guy who I have a lot of respect for as an individual. But Schwartz, look at this quote. It's not a good one. quote, it's almost a perfect storm for criminal conspiracy when you've got young athletes with uncertain futures who may be financially vulnerable. And the rationale would be they're not going to be really hurting anyone if they shave a few points or lose by a few more. There's a lot of potential for illegal bookies or even legal sports books to make a lot of money from this. Schwartz's title here at UNLV, well, he's director of the Vegas Center for Gaming Research, so obviously a guy who should know what he's talking about and a guy who in many instances does know what he's talking about. But Schwartz, like anybody else in academia, when they can get a headline, they try to grab it.
And in this case, he didn't know what he was talking about. That whole idea that illegal sports books and legal sports books can make money off of these scandals, no, they're the ones that most want to prevent the scandals from happening because they're the ones that stand to lose. So when someone reads this article who doesn't know much and is relying on these articles for their information, boy, are they being misled. They're taken down a wrong path thinking, oh, these illegal bookies are the one who's setting this up. Shame on them. Which then gets to the root of whether gambling should be illegal or not. Now, it's absolutely nothing to do with the bookmakers. Nothing. These were small time limits. You go back to the Tulane scandal, Boston College, Arizona State. No, these are just petty little guys trying to make a little bit of money. And, of course, the one unifying thread through almost all of these things, bottom line, is almost no one ever actually made any money. That's why we would like for them to be publicized pretty well, because, guys, these things tend to not work out anyway. That was a bad quote by Schwartz. He should have known better. That was a terrible quote for the writer to have run in the article. He should have known better. But now we know that the writer didn't know better, because guess what happens? Almost 6 years to the day, here comes our friend Justin Wolfers again. And Wolfers makes his reappearance in the Birmingham News article. How do they refer back to the study? Let's take a look at the return of our friend. He, and of course the he being Wolfers, concluded in a 2006 research paper that 1%, or nearly 500 games, and again, this is a study that was based on 16 years of data. 500 games involved gambling-related corruption and suggested about 6% of strongly favored teams had players willing to manipulate their performance. That, of course, is all bullshit. There is absolutely nothing in the Wolfers paper that has a scintilla of evidence of point shaving. He pointed out a statistical anomaly. So when someone says players willing to shave their performance, there's not a word in there about that. This is the writer just simply making something up that he thinks will make for a compelling article. Remember, the Auburn scandal's a local one, so he knows a lot of people are going to be reading. The writer's got a chance to make a name for himself. Hey, a lot of people are going to read this. I'll make it dramatic. That will work. What did Wolfers find? The entirety of the paper came down to one thing. In his time frame, late 80s, to about 2004, 2005, college favorites of 12 points or more had a worse point spread record than any other range. So I said, oh, you know what? If you're going to shave points, a big favorite is the most likely to do it. So let's attribute that to that fact. Not the fact that there were market biases in play, the fact that the market would actually inflate some of the big favorites just a little bit higher because it was hard to get underdog bettors to come in on those games. That's where the markets were in the 90s. So we had to address this, and we did. We did a two-part article posted on Covers in a white paper breaking down the flaws in that Wolfers study. And here was the most amazing part. You know, he's talking about 48.4% evidence they're shaving points in college basketball. We took the same time frame in the National Football League. And you know what? Favorites of 12 points or more covered 47% of the time. Because that's where the market biases were. According to Wolfers, if you put those two charts out there, NFL's fixed. They're shaving points. Because it was more dramatic than college basketball. He didn't include that in his study. One of the things a proper researcher would have done is use other sports to see if those college basketball numbers held up when you do proper comparisons. But he can't do that because if he did that, he wouldn't have had a paper. And this idea that he wants to promote himself. And he did a tour around that time. He was getting on the morning talk shows until people started telling him that he didn't know what he was talking about. So is there any meat on the bone here? No, there really isn't. Like I said, in my betting lifetime, over 100,000 games on the College Board with not any real major evidence that this is widespread at all. You're talking about percentage points that start at 0.00. If anything, it shows us how great college athletes are. They do have a pride in what they do. We just can't prevent the media from muddying the waters, but when we see those waters get muddied, we'll do our best to filter it a little bit for our viewers.
When we come back, no college games on the slate today, which means it's straight to the NBA when Money Time begins. Up next.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
That there.
It's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight at the Staples Center in L.A., where the Boston Celtics, 5.5-point underdogs against the, do we call them the slumping L.A. Clippers? Maybe. This team has now fallen to 8-9 straight up since Chauncey Billups was injured, out for the year. Not the same team without Chauncey, plain and simple. When they rallied from 21 down to tie the Warriors in the fourth quarter last night and came up short anyway. And here's the frightening part about that slide for the Clips. Yeah, they've lost 9 games during this stretch. Only 2 of their 9 losses have come against teams with winning records. So they've been losing to the weaker foes that they've been facing during this span. And yes, they certainly still have to be favored in this ballgame, because as we noted last week, that Celtics track record is just awful. Second night of back-to-backs on the road. So that sets up for another Celtics downfall here, Dave, right?
We referred to some of the work that Wolfers had done as BS earlier. It shows you what can be done with numbers. Guys, you got to keep your own and chart your own whenever possible. And we've got a classic example of this with the Celtics tonight. We used this chart last week on the Celtics about second night of back-to-back on the road and how awful they've been. Well, now let's update it and take a look again. Absolutely dreadful this year. 0-6 straight up and against the spread. Now, this is when the second night of a back-to-back is purely a road game. They lose to the spread by 82 points in the process. Means the odds makers are missing their projection by over 13.5 points per game. So now, if you do automatic tracking, like so many people do with their trends, it's going to say, that's the spot the Celtics are in tonight. We should follow it. But you don't want to, because not only does it not correlate, you might not want to count tonight's game in this chart going forward. I won't. When I chart the Celtics in this category, tonight's game doesn't count. Here's why. That second of back-to-back on the road brings a lot of things into play. Travel, going to a different hotel room, levels of fatigue. Not this time. You know what? The Celtics, they've been in L.A. all weekend. They played on this same court yesterday afternoon. You go back to the same hotel, go back to the same court today for a shoot-around. And note, a lot of times when you're playing back-to-back games on the road, you don't even have a shoot-around the day of the second game. A lot of times your team is tired. No, the fatigue element's not there. The travel element isn't there. And if you want to talk fatigue and do a direct comparison, they tipped off against the Lakers 12:30 Pacific time yesterday afternoon. The Clippers, in the same building, tipped off 7 hours later that night. Celtics actually could be even a little fresher than the Clippers. So that pattern that's sitting out there, it just doesn't apply tonight.
Yeah, and when we talk about the Boston side of the equation, it might not be about fatigue for the starters, but whether or not Doc Rivers can get anything from his bench. because yesterday in the loss to L.A., you can point the finger squarely at that Boston bench. They combined the entirety of the Celtics bench score, 11 points, 9 rebounds, 0 assists for the ball game. And that made all the difference in a game in which 4 of the 5 Boston starters were in the positive category in the plus-minus stats, while Andrew Bynum, the only Laker starter to finish with that plus. It was L.A.'s bench beating Boston's bench. That's why the Celtics went down straight up. Although, if you backed them and plus the points, you were able to cash your ticket.
Let's go to Salt Lake City, where right now the Jazz a 7-point favorite over the Pistons. A couple times on the show in recent weeks, we've talked about teams hitting rock bottom and what happens afterwards. You saw Orlando had that disastrous performance against Charlotte. They come back and they beat the Bulls. The Celtics, an absolute disaster at Philadelphia last week. They come back and get the money a couple times, including a dominating win over Portland on Friday night. Detroit's first game after the All-Star break, a home game against Philadelphia, and it was beyond ugly. 97-68. Absolute rock bottom. Now, sometimes you think about good teams at rock bottom, even bad teams have that same motivation. Hey, wait a minute, we're not this bad. Pride kicks into play. What does Detroit do since then? 4-1 straight up and against the spread. In a current 3-game win streak, they've allowed 86, 85, and 78 points in regulation. That's pretty good defense. A couple of things happening. One is the Pistons were better than their record all along this year, but they haven't had their full roster in play. Finally, against Toronto over the weekend, the full roster in play for the first time all year. Charlie Villanueva didn't play a lot, but he's back now. A solid 19-point win for the Pistons. Utah hasn't quite been the same. They just concluded a 5-game road trip where they allowed an average of 102 points per game. There were some defensive issues that were a big part of that. Obviously, those same issues likely to be in play today.
Rajah Bell is a key cog in the Utah Jazz's defense. Rajah Bell's not a guy who's going to affect point spreads. He's not a guy who's going to create many headlines in the NBA, but he is absolutely a must-have guy for the Jazz on the court if they're to play their best basketball. 2-6 straight up without Bell in the lineup so far this year, but note that only 7 of those 8 missed games were due to injury. What happened at Chicago on Saturday night is something that has not really been clarified just yet. Bell was not injured, but he did not show up for a pregame meeting and did not play in the game. Here's a quote from Jazz head coach Tyrone Corbin. Quote, he's not with us, internal matters. That's all I want to say about it. I don't want to talk about it anymore, all right? Now, there is a meeting planned with Corbin, Jazz general manager Kevin O'Connor, and Bell for this afternoon, which means we could see him back in the lineup this evening, or perhaps we could see him sent packing as the trade deadline approaches. Now, Corbin wanted to establish himself as the clear leader of the team, but he also wanted this bunch to play hard-nosed defense, and they're number 25 defensively in the NBA on their best set of charts.
So what happens when you don't play very good defense? It's real simple. You don't get very many easy wins. So you know we're going to go with this tonight. Let's get a Detroit Pistons logo up there, I believe, for the first time all year. Pistons plus 7. Utah has only had 4 wins all season by more than 10. Nothing comes easily when you don't D up. Usual problem of a team that just had a long road trip and only one day back to get turned around again. That day not productively spent because of the Bell issues. Al Jefferson, he misses the shoot-around early today. He's got some family issues to deal with. Look for a vulnerable Utah team to struggle just to win the game tonight and have a difficult time getting a margin against a Detroit team that's better than you have them charted, most likely.
That's going to wrap it up for the Monday edition. Huge week ahead. Remember, tomorrow is brackets. Wednesday, we're going to break down all the Thursday and Friday games. A double show on Wednesday, so make sure you tune right back here to Vegas Sports Day over the course of the next 48 hours. From Alinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you again tomorrow.
It's the worst line ever.